baseball knowledge doesn't discriminate amongst levels. And I heard that, and I looked, and I said, you know what? He's right. Just because I'm a college coach at Cortland makes me not much smarter than a coach coaching T-ball in my local community. The knowledge is there for all of us. The challenge is, can you communicate it? Then, are you a good enough communicator where someone understands what you're saying? And then, can you get someone to believe and trust in you? So I got in there after everyone hit, and I, you know, put a bunt down first, a bunt down third, and I go, now this is what you guys do. And I take my bat, just kind of flail it, and I drill myself right in the face. Blood starts spewing. Half my tooth drops to the ground. I look down to the ground. I see it. I picked it up, put it in my mouth. Blood's coming out. My nose, my eyes are welling up. Our guys are in the middle stages of laughter, and oh my God. So I had half a tooth for the majority of the year because I thought it was great to show a bunting technique.
You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, connecting our coaches with some of the best baseball minds in our game. Now here's your host, Jeremy Schiedinger.
Broadcasting from the ABCA National Office here in Greensboro, North Carolina, welcome back to our show and thank you for joining on the conversation with us. Each and every week, we commit to bringing you certified audio gold that you can digest on your own time. Inside your daily routine, driving to and from the office, or maybe you're road tripping for recruiting, or you're with your teams or your families, maybe you're working on your field or just mowing the grass. You could be just sitting at your desk in the office, just grinding away, but we know our coaches are finding ways to keep these podcasts and the wealth of information from our guests inside your earbuds, and you're using them to grow yourself as coaches. We love it, guys. We appreciate it, and we have some tremendous insight in the on-deck circle for you this week. But first, be aware that with the release of this show, our early bird deadline is approaching on this Friday, November 17th, where if you register for this January's ABCA convention in Indianapolis, you will save money. For $125, you can become a member of your baseball coaching fraternity, have access to all the terrific benefits we offer our member coaches. Plus, you'll be on the list to attend our national convention on January 4th through the 7th in Indianapolis. Now, you do know what they call Indy, right? They call it the Sunshine State. I mean, it's gorgeous. And you can bump elbows with almost 6,000 coaches from around the world, see 25 clinics up on our main stage, another 20 inside our expo theater. You can walk around and chat with over 300 exhibitors inside the world's largest baseball trade show, all waiting for you in Indianapolis. So if you're sitting on the fence, tip yourself over, get to Indy, join us, do it for your career and your development. Do it for your players and your programs. Invest in yourself and come see what the ABCA is all about. Which brings us to today's episode, and we connect with one of the winningest coaches in NCAA Division III and the head coach at one of the upper echelon programs in the country. We're going to sit down and talk with SUNY Cortland head coach Joe Brown. We're going to talk through his career in baseball, get some of his reflections from his growth as a coach. You just pull up a bucket with us, and we're going to get Joe to open up his thoughts on personal growth and his journey in this realm, plus how he has evolved over the years in his approach to coaching young men. And by the end of this show, guys, it's going to be easy to see why his alumni base is so strong and why they absolutely love this guy. Coach Brown holds a .796 winning percentage coming into his 19th year at the helm for the Red Dragons. You tack on 18 straight Division III national tournament appearances under his reign. You also have 25 straight for the program. He also has 10 World Series berths over his tenure, finally breaking through and bringing the national championship home to Cortland State in 2015. And we're going to get Joe to open up on some of the funnier moments that have happened to him over the years. But I think the most unique aspect that you can keep hearing is how entrenched this guy is into developing and growing up his players, a passionate teacher across every front, a true baseball rat, but a loyal friend and ABCA member. So let's get this going. Let's dial up and connect with SUNY Cortland head coach Joe Brown and welcome him in as our guest on today's episode. And get ready, coaches. This great show is coming at you right now. Coaches, thanks for dialing into our podcast today. We've got a tremendous episode ready for you to digest as we're going to talk with the head coach of one of the most successful small college programs in the country. When you talk about Division III baseball, there are a few programs that always come up in that conversation. Our goal today is to connect you with one of those head coaches and listen into how he's gone about building that program, being the model of consistency, and maintaining a level of excellence inside the SUNY Cortland program. Let's welcome in head coach Joe Brown. Joe, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Jeremy, I appreciate it.
It's our pleasure.
Good opportunity here.
Yep. We're excited to talk with you. We've got so much we want to get into, but where we always kick off our shows, Joe, we get on guys who are loyal ABCA members, and we want to talk about your path inside the ABCA, what it's meant to you over the years, how excited you are for Indianapolis.
Two quick things. One is in regards to the ABCA, I think I joined immediately right out of college. My first experience at Finger Lakes Community College as an assistant coach, you need to join the ABCA. First convention I ever attended was in New Orleans. And wow. I think the ABCA has done a couple things. And I'm going to be honest and frank, there was a time, I think, in all coaches' careers, at least in mine, where I had attended many years in a row, and then I was lax. I got comfortable. Mm-hmm. You make the assumption that either, I wouldn't say you know it all, but you've seen the drills, you've heard the conversations.
Sure.
And so there was a period of time where I wasn't attending for a variety of reasons. One, financial at the Division III level, getting funding to going to these things mm-hmm. was a challenge for a while. But two, I think the most important is we think we know it all, quite frankly. And I went to my very first ABCA convention in New Orleans. I heard probably one of the most impactful things was John Scalinas, the eight balls of baseball.
There it is.
And if you've never heard it, it's unbelievable. It's something that I tell the story to my guys all the time about whether they're a smart fly or dumb fly. And I could go into that another time. But I think what happened is after that time where you get where you think you know everything as a coach, you realize you know nothing.
That's it.
So then you get reacquainted and started going back into the conventions. I've been to amazing cities, Chicago, Atlanta, San Antonio, Orlando, New Orleans. Was upset one year I couldn't make the trip to San Diego because I blew my ankle out in a pickup basketball game a week before and was on crutches. And the irony is the person that I put in my spot to go that year was my assistant coach, Scott Brown,
yep.
who took my ticket, who now, of course, is the coach at Vanderbilt. So I'd say it's been a roller coaster of professional experience with me, but the people that have been probably the biggest impacts in my life are either ABCA Hall of Famers and the memories of going into San Antonio, in all these different cities, Chicago, as I already mentioned, and listening to some of the people, listening to Paul Maneri one year, Tommy Lasorda one year, John Scalinas, and that's just to name a few, are probably the things that I share now. But the impact in the last 4 to 6 years of getting back thoroughly engrossed, and quite frankly, Jeremy, this is you. You're doing this in Division III in the college liaison, making the ABCA more known and involved with college baseball coaches and making that connection. Where I think as a Division III guy for years, we felt it to be not the convention so much, but some of the issues, Division I issues.
That's a great point. I know you and I have talked about that a lot. I think flashback for our listeners, you know, about going to my third year here. Prior to that, you know, we had not had a liaison in place here in the national office that really facilitated and looked after small schools in terms of Division II, Division III, NAI, and junior college. And so to your point, I brought that mindset here my first couple weeks is from a small college perspective, we looked at the ABCA as really Division I kind of led the charge, which we all know that it does. There is trickle-down effect. But now I think having someone, I appreciate your sentiments. It means the world to me to know that our small school guys appreciate having someone here that looks after them, cares about their issues, wants to go fight in front of the NCAA or the NAI or the NJCAA and hopefully make your lives a little bit better.
It's not even debatable. I mean, my experience meeting you in Wisconsin that year, the fact that you came out to the Appleton and then you were heading off to the NAI World Series and and you have a wonderful family and ABCA is lucky. I don't know. I'm not sure if they realize what they have until sometimes people are gone, but just the communication, the barnstorming events that you're going on and everybody raving about it. I mean, and it's hard to do something new and to get it kicked off. And when it is, and when it's successful, those guys are the rock stars.
Yeah.
Coaches is just part of it. The people that do all the work behind the scenes, they are the ones that make it happen. So I'm just sharing that with you, brother.
Yeah, dude, you know that means the world to me. I think our friendship has really blossomed over the last few years, and those words I'll pass on. We're certainly doing some really cool things here at ABCA. We're prepping for one of our biggest conventions ever as we head to Indianapolis, but you just made this reference. We got to walk right through it as it leads us into talking about your career path in baseball. Let's go back to even playing days. I mean, you played for an ABCA Hall of Famer, George Valicente at Ithaca, and won the 88 National Championship, and then working with Steve Owens, who's obviously a loyal ABCA member, what he's done at Bryant and helping build Cortland State. Can you just walk us through your career in baseball and give us the glimpse of where you're at today?
Average player, went to a college where a coach told me I had to get better, not told me that I was going to be a starter or, you know, you never back then asked a coach where you stand because he'd probably look at you and tell you you're standing in my office. and so, I mean, that's what you figured that out. So I went and was just hoping, and every year, and I've kind of brought some of those things back in here at Cortland about making the team every year, not assuming you're on the team every year, that you put the time and effort in. And so when I went to Ithaca College and played for Coach Valicente, I'd say that in my life, it was probably the biggest impact in my life by far. Not even close. You know, my father passed away this past February, and one of the first people to contact me was Coach Valicente. And because of the impact that my dad always said, listen to Coach Valicente, listen, and then you get better. And so playing there and then getting the opportunity at the end of my experience there to go on to do my master's work at Miami of Ohio, which opened up another realm of one understanding back when Division I, back in those days, when you were kind of the recruiting guy, throwing BP, doing early work, you did it all. And you coached every position. And then that summer, I was able to get a position in the Northeastern Collegiate Baseball League as a head coach with the Ithaca Lakers. And I had hired, at the time, it asked Steve Owens to work with me as an assistant coach. And then Steve had just finished his first year at Cortland. At the end of the summer, he turned around and said, hey, you want to, and I said, absolutely, Steve. And before I made that decision, I actually asked Coach Valicente, because if you know the Ithaca-Cortland issue, you know, with the Cortica and the rivalry being 15 miles away. So I went to Coach Val and said, hey, do you know, would this be a good thing? Do you think I should go over and coach? And at the time, Coach Val had a lot of coaches, came over here never knowing that 26 years later, I'd probably still be here, or that I would turn into being the head coach.
Sure.
Steve and I coached with each other for 7 years and just worked. You know, Steve was the engine man, and we just worked. And I think we hit it off. He asked me what I wanted to coach, and being a middle infielder in college, I naturally said, "Yeah, I'll coach the pitchers." And so I coached pitchers. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I knew nothing. That's when we were going to the ABCA all the time.
Sure.
And you learned everything.
Yeah,
just reaping every resource. I knew so much. I knew nothing about it when I started. When I was 24, coaching kids that were 19, 20.
Yeah.
How to pitch. And then to this day, what Steve has done when he went on to Lemoyne, and then all my relationships in summer ball sheets, you know, have coached numerous Louisville players. Coach McDonald and I are good friends. You know, Coach Corbin, who has hired Scotty Brown as his pitching coach and taken Vanderbilt players over there. My college classmate at Miami of Ohio was Tracy Smith, who's at Arizona State now.
Sure.
And Chris Lemonis at Indiana, all those guys have taken players from over the years, and developed good professional relationships with. So, but Steve Owens hired me, number one, and George Valicente allowed me to be on his baseball team.
It's outstanding. And now I don't even know if I should call you Joe. Should I just call you the commish?
a much different perspective, let me tell you.
Go into that. Coaching summer baseball, now you're running the whole show with the New York Collegiate Baseball League. Talk about that.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty unique. You know, I was fortunate. I managed 8 years in the New York Collegiate League, and then for 6 summers, and my athletic director here at Cortland and my colleagues here at Cortland said, you're nuts. When I was a head coach here, I was going off to Sanford, Maine, managing 2 summers.
Yeah.
Then to the Vermont Mountaineers for 4 summers in the New England League. And there's no league well, maybe the Northwoods League.
Yeah.
But we travel some serious miles in the New England League. And so then after 2014 or 15, I said, I'm done. I mean, the year that we were fortunate and won the national championship, a week later, I was in Vermont riding buses, had no chance to celebrate all summer, nothing.
Right.
I was in Vermont. So then I came back, and then some people, some league administrators said, hey, Joe, you'd be interested in the NYCBL? I said, I'm not coaching. I'm done coaching. I need to focus on Cortland. They said, no, league administrator. So literally, Sheets, I went to a meeting, listened. They're all their franchise owners and everything. And by the end of the meeting, I got voted in as a commissioner. I'm not joking. Now, there was some talk about it, but I hadn't really committed to it. Mm-hmm. And so since then, we've done some great things. We've added teams. It's almost if you could do it as a trial basis for a head coach. Mm-hmm. Now my job is to review ejection reports, read them and say, boy, did I ever act like that? Oh. And then say, hey, you know, when you call a head coach or a GM and say, hey, you know, you got to sit a game. You really can't chase the umpire to the parking lot. Yeah. You can't
frown upon that.
You know, so I have a tremendous different, I love it. I enjoy it. It doesn't impact my job at Cortland. I wouldn't let to do that. And, it's a cool thing. It really is.
Isn't it like sitting in the chair of an athletic director? Isn't that the way you could view it?
A little bit, but I go out. I go to every ballpark. I meet with the players. I meet with the general managers, host families. I want to know these are good experiences. There's so many summer leagues, as you know.
Sure.
You know, that you got to have a good league. You got to have a good reputation. You have to be what you say you are. You got to meet with the owners, the board members, and I do that. I'm very active in the summer, but... Mm-hmm. So I'm busy in the summer, but I enjoy it. I mean, I'm not going to complain for one day that I'm around a sport, you know, so I'm okay with it.
That's awesome. Let's go into this because I think this is an interesting dynamic that I want to make sure we cover. You know, 19 years as head coach, walking into your 19th, a 796 win percentage, man. I mean, again, when we talk about the scope of Division III baseball, SUNY Cortland's name is always in the mix. 18 tournament appearances, 10 World Series appearances, 15 conference championships, and obviously you talked about winning the 15 national championship. Talk about Cortland State, because I think for anyone paying attention as a small school enthusiast, talk about the situation you have there at Cortland, just that rich tradition of winning that's there in place with the Red Dragons.
Yeah, it started with an attitude and Steve Owens when we started to really recruit hard. And that, I think a lot of it changed back then when a lot of people, and everybody's recruiting, everybody gets players. There's no issues about that, and there's so many schools. And I think one of the real neat things about Division III baseball championships, I think at one point there was a 17-year period where there was not a repeat winner.
Wow.
We have such diversity in Division III institutions, as you know, having been a former head coach at a Division III school.
Yeah.
You have schools all the way down to 800 enrollments up to the 20,000 enrollments, and so every school is unique. We have about 6,100 students here. We have three different colleges, education, arts and sciences, and professional studies. About 60 different majors, great athletic administration, but our college administration, and we all know that's huge, regardless of the level of their interest, impact, and the fact that our college president knows all of our parents, our players of all sports here, not just baseball. Rich tradition. We started an alumni. Our alumni fan base is tremendous. You know, after we were fortunate and many people have these stories. And I think this is an attribute about Division III baseball coaches across the country that you probably experienced more than anybody because you've seen it. Mm-hmm. The level of involvement of alumni in baseball programs blows away, I think, almost any other sport at any institution. Meaning, who does more fundraising? Who does more camps, more clinics, more fundraising, works on their facility, has more alumni events than the sport of baseball. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we underwent a Wallace Field campaign after we won the national championship in the less than 2 months raised $115,000 from our alumni.
Wow.
And then we just, every year we have a reunion and the avid, but that's what baseball, I don't know what it is, Sheets, and maybe you have the answer because you've been all over and you've seen some amazing facilities. I see the videos and the things from all the different facilities. I mean, 20 years ago, baseballs, there weren't stadiums like there are now.
That's right.
There weren't at all levels. In Division III, I've seen Baldwin Wallace's new field. I've seen Gus, you know, you see all these new facilities and you're amazed at that.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is private dollars and alumni dollars. And I'm not sure what it is about baseball, loyalty, passion, whatever it might be, but it's pretty strong. And so here at Cortland, we have that. One of the things I'm very proud at here, and there's a lot of pressure each year to do this, is the fact that the 7 years I was with Steve and now the 18, 25 years in a row. And I tell my guys, that's a quarter of a century, if you know what that means. Just a quarter of a century of being able to go to the NCAA tournament 25 years in a row. We take a lot of pride in that.
Sure.
And that cultivates a lot of interest. And so that's the pressure each year, but that's, you know, we welcome it. You know, we don't necessarily run from it. And there's a lot of great programs out there and a lot of very, very good coaches. And that's what keeps you sharp as a coach.
Well, those are some terrific points. And one I'm going to jump on, as you mentioned, out on our Barnstormers Clinics tour, we spend so much time with coaches from around the country, and we're listening to how they've built their programs, the success they're having, but also the individual situations that all of our coaches across college, through high school, through travel, through youth, all the different situations that we're involved with. I'll give you one example to your point is going to be Rich Price, head coach of the University of Kansas. And if you know anybody that knows Skip, they talk about how that man has worked his tail off, not getting always the support from the university in terms of funding, and doing private donors and getting his alumni involved and making sure they've built one of the best baseball facilities I've ever stepped foot on. We talk about all turf, the padded wall, the brand new scoreboard, the chair backs, the hitting facility down the left field and the right field lines. And it's to your point, there's just a special element inside of baseball coaches that they never settle. They always look to improve. They always look to grow. If you won't give me a way, I'll figure out a way to make it happen. I think that's what makes baseball coaches, especially, just some unique people.
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's in the fiber of baseball coaches.
That's
and
right.
We're not light switch sports.
That's right.
You know, we can't just, you know, go turn it on. I mean, for us to run a practice on a daily basis, and those are the fruits of all the labors of all those coaches that had the years. And I marvel back, because Steve Owens this past fall was inducted into our C Club Athletics Hall of Fame, and he stopped by the field, and we had a big training going on with an umpire association on our field for 3 days. And Steve stopped by, and I showed him in the back shed where I still have the blue water wizard. That blue water wizard is something we used to dig holes on the field with prior to tarps, get here at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, take puddles off your field, hook up hose up to it.
Yep.
And he goes, "You still have that thing?" I said, "I still use it." And I think it's that mentality that gets into baseball coaches of, hey, we have to play in inclement weather. And yeah. I'll tell you a funny story, and it's very quick. One time we have a facilities meeting on your college campus with athletics. Everyone's in there to voice their concerns with their facilities. And I hear, I won't say the sports, but the comment was, can we raise the temperature in the gymnasium because we couldn't really break a sweat good enough during practice, during intersession. I'm sitting there, I'm like, is this a joke?
Yeah.
Is someone joking? Is there going to be candid camera here?
Sure.
And I'm sitting there, and it came turn to my term, and I looked at our facilities. The guy said, "Hey, I've got one for you. How about come March, you make sure that it's sunny, my field is dry,
yep,
the grass is green, and there's no bumps in the field." And I think we're just so used to dealing with adversity, with yeah, climates, with fields, that all these wonderful things being built across the country are the results of people's hard work.
That's it.
Jeremy.
That's it.
And alumni. And honestly, the representation in the promotion of baseball 100% through the ABCA. I teach a 2-credit coaching class here at Cortland. Mm-hmm. The requirement is to learn all about the ABCA and to eventually join it. So I have 30 kids in the class. I think 15 have already joined it. And I said,
wow,
this is a professional organization. Why? Look at the speakers, research the speakers. And so, you know, that's a no-brainer. But I do agree with you. Even though there's wonderful facilities, it's a result of coaches putting in years and labor.
That's it. That's it. 100%. Let's go back to your early days. You talked about coaching summer ball or those first few years there at Miami, then breaking into summer ball, then obviously jumping on staff at Cortland State. When you look back, and this is going to be an interesting, Joe, when you look back at your first few years of coaching, and you talked about obviously taking over the pitching staff and figuring some things out, but what were those early lessons that you learned that kind of smacked you around, but you can sit back today and just laugh at who you were at 23, 24 years old?
I think one of the things, and I'm trying to remember the speaker, it was my first or second ABCA clinic, and it wasn't Scalinas. I also heard Ken Revisa too, and I'm a huge advocate of his before he was really, really, really popular, because 25 years ago, I did my master's degree in sports psychology.
Wow.
But I think the first thing that I probably learned was baseball knowledge doesn't discriminate amongst levels. And I heard that, and I looked, and I said, you know what? He's right.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by that? And I talk to players when I talk at coaches' clinics. Just because I'm a college coach at Cortland makes me not much smarter than a coach coaching T-ball in my local community.
Right.
The knowledge is there for all of us. The challenge is, can you communicate it? Then are you a good enough communicator where someone understands what you're saying And then can you get someone to believe and trust in you? So I think 27 years ago, and I will, by the end of this conversation, hope recall the speaker I heard that is, baseball knowledge doesn't discriminate. I mean, just think about it. Every time we watch our favorite MLB team, we have managed that team the next day and haven't lost a game.
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
Undefeated.
I mean, I've never lost a weekend series when I coached on Monday and Tuesday.
That's a fact.
Because I corrected all my mistakes.
Yep.
Well, the knowledge is there. Are you willing? Is like when you do the barnstormers, there it is. There's the knowledge. Are you willing to go get it?
What's up?
Are you willing then to take that? And I've always referenced coaching and teaching because I teach too, as cutting and pasting.
Yeah.
They're cutting, pasting professions. I need to cut this. I paste it over here. I cut this. I like this. And that's what all those clinics do. And it was my very first one in New Orleans when I went to that I heard that. And I've used that for, I don't know how many years, 27 years now. That baseball knowledge doesn't discriminate amongst levels, junior, little league, T-ball, JV, modified. You know, we all could go coach the Yankees, or we could all go coach the Dodgers when you have Kershaw.
Yeah.
You know, but can you really manage and coach? Are you a good communicator? Best class you can take, public speaking.
That's it.
Right?
100%. I agree 100%.
You know? So I would say that that to me is when you learn that as a young coach, that it doesn't, you know, like I'm saying, oh, geez, I came from a Division III school, so therefore I can't coach with people. Oh, yes, you can.
Yeah, still the same you know? Game.
I mean, I would argue with many people, I think this is the first time ever my favorite NFL team is New England Patriots. And one unique thing about the Patriots is that they won a Super Bowl with three guys, their offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and head coach that all came from Division III colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Their D coordinator, Patricia, from RPI, who was an engineering major.
Mm-hmm.
Josh McDaniels from John Carroll University. And Bill Belichick from Wesleyan. There's no football powerhouses there, that's and awesome. Yet they're good coaches.
That's awesome.
So I think that's my biggest thing I learned.
That's a great point. A fantastic point. Thanks for opening that one up.
Yeah.
There's a dynamic here, and I can hear it in terms of challenging yourself and never being satisfied with what your knowledge base is or where you're at or what you think or what you teach. And I'm just interested, take us into how are you still challenging yourself? How are you still developing and growing? But also maybe something point to maybe even a year ago that maybe something happened in a game that made you think a little bit differently about how you go about teaching that even inside your own program.
It's a great question. I think my whole approach to the off season is strength and conditioning. And I'll be honest with you, I've come full circle on time committed to baseball.
Okay.
And, you know, what do I mean by that is more to me is not better. More efficient is better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't practice, you know, if we have the access to, you know, 6 days a week, you know, that's what you're allowed. Many people practice 6 days a week, double sessions sometimes, and I watch it in football and I watch it in other sports and I watch what it does to athletes. And I think some of the lessons I've learned too have even been outside of baseball.
Yeah.
I once listened to Bob Knight when he was doing a press conference about going into postseason play, and they said, what's the most important thing for you, game plan? He said, no, rest. And I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. When you're out at the World Series or in a regional tournament, I'm not a huge advocate of letting my guys go watch the game. They've watched enough baseball. Stay at the hotel, hang out with each other.
Sure.
As far as games is concerned, I'd say it's how I treat players.
Okay.
I'm not easy to play for. I challenge you because all of us, you know, is it nature? Is it nurture? I mean, do the greatest athletes of all time, when you define the mental toughness, what is it? Or is it more so about being mentally conditioned?
Sure.
A lot of mine comes from my days playing for Coach Valiseni. My father's a blue-collar guy, never went to college. When I would call him with challenges, and that's why I miss him so much, when I call him for challenges, he'd look at me and goes, you went to college, figure it out. I'm like,
go.
Hey, figure it out.
That's
you
it.
Know?
That's it.
So, hey, I'm not hitting a curveball. Figure it out. So sometimes my message would be that simple, but that's not solving the problem. So I think then it had to become, you know, hey, you know, sometimes when you're teaching a person, they're either an auditory learner or a visual learner. It's one of the two. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, what I said, did you understand that? So you ask the player, did you understand what I said? What do you think I said? Ooh, there's the first thing. That's why I say knowledge is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Having all the drills, but what's our whole goal in sport? Any sport, doesn't matter, to take that mechanical and have it become automatic response.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you have to have a philosophy, and then you have to have a conviction, but you also have to be flexible. And I think the biggest change I've made is I've lessened the practice time. I've become more efficient. I've become more focused. And I've been more like, okay, your team doesn't hit good in situations. Well, your whole practice should be situations. I can't yell at a kid for not hitting a breaking ball if I'm not throwing him breaking balls 5 days a week, Sheets.
That's a great point. Fantastic point.
You know, yet we just roll kids out and take BP on the field and everyone does opposite field hitting. Well, you know what? Maybe my kid can't hit the opposite field. Maybe he can't. So you know what I'm going to do? Do what Kevin Millar did. Stand on the plate and hook everything.
That's it.
Hit it up the middle.
Right.
You treat everybody fairly, but not equally,
that's
right?
That's a great point.
Yep. You treat them all fairly. Everybody's treated fairly, but when we start to just do them all equally, it's not that way. And I think that's the thing. And I think it's just the older you get. I think the greatest phrase I ever heard, greatest, was Lou Holtz. When he was talking at a graduation ceremony, and I watched it, and he goes, he looks out to the student body, and I say this to my players sometimes, because, you know, what do we get today? We get kids all coming in that have had lessons, hitting coaches, strength coaches, everybody.
Yes.
I said, you guys don't need me anymore. You just got Google. You got a Google coach.
Right.
So I said, but I know this much. You know, when you're looking at it, and I heard Lou Holtz looked at everybody, goes, hey, I know one thing. I've been 19 before, but you haven't been 70.
Yeah, I like that.
And I get it. So when I look at my players, I go, I use your experience. You haven't been 49 before, guys, but I have been 19. So I'm saying that not just to listen to what I'm saying, but what I'm saying is these experiences put us in this position. I'm recommending because you're not the first guy I've ever had this problem. You're not going to be the last.
That's it.
Oh, so wow. I think that's the biggest challenge in coaching is to get people just to listen to you and trust you. And so I've had to do more of that, trust my coaches. But I practice less on this campus than anybody else, Sheets. I do. I've taken a complete different the last few years. I get fresher athletes, more involved athletes, more excited athletes. I'm not the model of more is better. Mm-hmm. I think more efficient and intense is better. And that's just me. So
outstanding. Thanks for offering that. Let me be your experience as a coach. I love that. Take us inside the highs and lows in your career. What are the specific moments that jump out to you that, you know, forever will be cemented in your brain as those high moments, but then there's the lows that I think from our listener standpoint, Joe, how did you get through them? What can you help other coaches that are out there in similar situations? How did you get through them that may be able to help them?
It's an awesome question. I'd say one of my highs was making a college team because it's hard. And back then it was highly competitive. And I think it's highly competitive now because, you know, there's more opportunities. There's more coaches recruiting, more opportunities for students. And to make a team meant a lot to me, man. To get a uniform meant a lot to me. You know, my dad once never could come to my Little League games at first. I remember coming home from my first game and I played three innings. And so my dad comes home dripping sweat from painting, looks at me and says, how'd it go? I said, well, I didn't go very well. I said, why? He said, I only played three innings, Dad. I think I'm one of the better players. And he goes, get your uniform. I said, what's up? He says, we're going to take it back to your coach. I said, what do you mean? He says, you're going to paint with me the rest of the summer. I said, I don't want to do that. He says, be quiet and listen to your coach. And then he said, or get better. I said, all right, I get it. And so I think making a team and having a uniform, those were huge, special moments to me. And I think that's why I make them big moments here at Cortland. Being a member of the team, we focus on that first. Getting a uniform and cherishing a uniform, we think it's very important. So I think one of the highest moments for me, naturally, was to make a college team. And I'd say not so much winning the national championship. Everybody says, oh, you know, that was the biggest. And it was. But all the other teams in getting to that point were kind of like the same because they went through the same battles. That team in 15 just was fortunate enough, and we've all been there before. I always said this wasn't necessarily our best team.
Right.
But it was the team that played the best in those moments. And so I'd say some of the lowest, I think probably last year, the passing of my dad.
Sure.
I think because he's always there for 24, 25 years, and he was that person that brought you back to earth. When you thought you were good, he'd let you know that you had to be better. When you thought you could be complacent, they told you to work harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing, probably some of my down moments, and I think probably a lot of Division III coaches could relate to this, is when you lose an assistant coach.
Sure.
When I say lose, when they move on, I mean, we don't have full-time assistants, at least here at Cortland, so you develop those relationships, you're in the hotels, you're doing the plans, and I seem like I'm always giving gifts for guys when they're leaving, and it's emotional for me. I mean, I have that emotional side, whether it be at a team Christmas party, saying goodbye to guys, and you love the alumni reunions. And so I'd say some of the worst moments. They weren't even game moments. Those are games. We get over those. We put our big boy pants on and we move on. But when I lose assistant coaches, I struggle with that, because from a selfish standpoint of getting your system in place and all that, you're rolling and then you make a change, you have to change. And then new ideas come in. So where it could be a positive where you get someone new, fresh and ideas, it's emotionally challenging. We spend a lot of time with each other.
That's a fact.
When we're in season, we're locked in,
I think this is always a tough question for guys like you that are baseball rats. I mean, you live and die in the dugout. But if you weren't coaching, Joe, what would you be doing?
Well, my original plan when I went to college, because Ithaca is a great school for communications, was to be in broadcast. I wanted to be involved in sports broadcasting.
Nice.
And I really did. And then after my fall semester, and things have a lot of changed in college where you meet an advisor and they tell you what you're good or not. Back then, they flat out told you, you're not going to make it. And they didn't worry about your feelings back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, you're struggling in public speaking, you're struggling in human communications, change your major.
That's right.
And you didn't debate with them. Now it's like, oh, let me help you. Let me do this. Let me do this. We help everyone through the process. Then it was just, so I got out of the major. And I didn't do it. And ironically enough, who one of our, I think he's 2 years older than us, Carl Ravitch.
Sure.
With Baseball Tonight, right? Yeah. Carl Ravitch is an Ithaca College alum, and he used to broadcast all of our baseball games on the college radio.
How about that?
He's with Baseball Tonight, and I'm coaching Cortland. I wouldn't switch. I'd do it in a heartbeat. We joke sometimes. A lot of us guys have played at Ithaca, and Carl's done very well, obviously.
I had a similar situation when I was an English major, and I took my first British literature class, and I sat down with my advisor. He goes, well, you got a D in British literature, so I don't think you need to be an English major anymore. I think you should do sports management. It was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah. Isn't that funny, though? Back then, that's how it used to be. They
Absolutely.
Just flat out told you, nope, you're not going to make it. They knew right away.
They could tell. Absolutely. Well, you thank goodness for opportunities like that, that somebody will speak the truth to you and be black and white and move you in the right direction. Take us behind the curtain here. Any hidden talents that you are willing to offer on the show, or any hobbies? We talked about hunting before we got recording, but maybe some hidden talents in there from Coach Brown that not a lot of people know about.
I don't know if they're, I'd say the thing that we do best here as a staff, and I wouldn't say necessarily me, is I'm going to tell you something we do here.
Okay.
I don't know if it's different anyplace else, but every single player here at Cortland, the first thing I tell a kid when he comes in here, I'll take a $20 bill out and I put it in front of a recruiter or a parent. And I set it on the table and I said, okay, if this $20 bill was in a chair in your classroom and you knew every time you could go to it, you'd get it, would you go? And the kid looks at me and says, absolutely. I said, that's right. You'd be busting down the door, man. Get that $20, put it in pocket.
Yeah.
I said, okay, now here's the other thing. What if you didn't go and the professor came and knocked on your door and said, hey, you owe me $20 for missing today? Well, that would probably force you to go. I said, you're an investment for your family. So are you going to be a good investment or bad investment? I said, you're an investment for a coach. Are you a good investment or bad investment for me on our roster? And so we put it out there right away. And then I look at a young man I do not text the kid, call a kid once a week. I refuse to do it. And I look at the kid and say, this is what we think of you. If you need me to call you or tell you how special you are, it's a week. This is probably not the place for you to come. This is an opportunity to compete. So we're very blunt up front. We share it with them. And I can tell you a number of times how the parents say, we really appreciate that, because sometimes kids don't, I say get it, but the guys do too. And the kids will repeat that story when they become juniors and seniors in the locker room. And they said, coach, you want to put the 20 down now? I said, no, I'm going to commit an NCAA violation.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
So I think that every single player here at Cortland sees their academic advisor sheets, and then they do not register until unless they're sitting with me. Every player, doesn't matter if they're a geology major, physics major, chem, bio, spent 40 minutes earlier today with a young man getting him set up for, he's in the pre-med track. And so I invest my time with them for their school, because I think that's huge. We always tell our guys, the baseball will be the easy part.
Sure.
But I can't bring you in here, pass you off to an academic advisor and just say, oh, you're going to get it done. No, I've got to be all in. It's not my assistant coaches. And I've got awesome assistants. And I think it must be good to come to Cortland and being a pitching coach, because Nick Senatiempo was with me. He's the head coach at St. Anselm now.
Yeah.
Casey Scott was a head coach down at Ave Maria. He's rejoined me as a pitching coach here. Scotty Landers at Oswego is the head coach. Scott Brown at Vanderbilt, Jeff Caulfield at Manhattanville. So we take time. We sit down with the guys. We set them up in the summer, and I'm all in with them. So I'm not going to just say, hey, I care about your school. You know, I'm excited. We've won the only time they've ever really stood up and clapped at a spring sports banquet when the baseball team for 2 years in a row now has won the team GPA award here.
Wow. How about that?
And people think, state school, you know, we've got some really bright guys that we have the top physics major at the college, two of the top bio majors at the college. And we had a first team academic All-American last year at Cortland. But I think a lot of it is you recruit right, but also you spend time with them. Next week, we will be sitting with every single kid that will register through us.
Wow.
But I'm going to do it, and I won't miss one of them.
That's it.
So I don't know if that's a hidden talent, but I think that you have to. I throw BP. I hit the fungos. I coach third. I'll coach every position. I recently, and you'll know what I'm coming from, having been a Division III head coach. I recently went and watched a junior college play, and in between, I spoke with a junior college coach and mentioned, hey, you know, I was talking about a certain position, and they referenced that, we're not a catching school.
Wow.
I said, what do you mean? And I said to him, what do you mean? I said, you're a baseball coach.
Sure.
You coach everything. When you were at Spalding, did you coach every position?
Just about, yeah. And if I didn't have an assistant to cover it, you know, I think you got to have it working.
You probably coach the positions, clean the bleachers, you know.
There's no doubt. Mowed, dragged, lined.
Yeah.
Did the leaf blower, and then dabbled in. And I think that you have to have... I think as a small college coach, and that's the dynamic that's unique, you know, I need to have a working knowledge of just about every position. Because like you said, the turnover in assistant coaches, I may have a great pitching coach, then he may be gone, and I've got to take over the pitchers for that year. Or I'm lucky to have a great catching coach for 2 or 3 years, then he gets another job, and guess who takes over the catchers? The head coach, whoever's in place.
Sure, and I think that's why the very first thing I ever learned at an ABCA convention in New Orleans was – baseball knowledge doesn't discriminate, man. You're JV modified coach. You can be way smarter than me. And the key I say to everybody is just share it, get out there, do the very best you can and talk in front of many groups, coach it, teach it and get different kids. And then, I think you get the good end result. And I don't know if it's necessarily hidden. I'm sure a lot of coaches advise their kids. And I'm not saying any program that doesn't do what I do isn't caring about school, because everybody, but I do personally, even in my 20th year, will sit with every single player and make sure they get their schedule the way it should be, because I have to answer to mom and dad.
Sure. Now, we're very fortunate here. I ask this question on every Dugout Chatter episode about the funniest stories that have happened to our coaches over the years. Now, we're very fortunate. I'm very fortunate that we have a former Cortland State player here in the office, Connor Griffin. And Connor Griff is doing an outstanding job as our ABCA intern. And I went to him before we started recording, and I said, man, give me just a touch of dirt. This story happened to work out so perfectly to have you on and for this moment. Let's talk about 2015. You guys on pace to win the national championship, but you demonstrating bunting technique ended up with a little bit of dental damage. Could you offer that story up for our listeners?
Well, God bless Charlie Long for letting us use his facility at North Carolina Wesleyan. So we'd stopped to play, and then they were in class, so they let us take BP first. And he says, Joe, use the field for as long as you want. I said, thanks. So, you know, Northern team, we're out. We're taking BP. We're excited. And you know how you're taking BP on the field, and this is where you go back to just doing the drill.
Sure.
I have a phrase, Sheets, and I think I did coin it. I'm not sure. You don't just do, I say it at every single clinic, every camp, every day. I said, we're not just going to do the drill to do the drill. We're doing the drill to improve our skill. Anyone can go do 3 sets of 10, but were your 10 good?
Sure.
How do we measure good? So I was frustrated watching our hitters. So NC Wesleyan players are all starting to gather in their dugout. We're finishing up. I called all the hitters to home plate. I said, hey, here, this is how you bunt. So I got in there after everyone hit, and I, you know, put a bunt down first, a bunt down third, and I go, now this is what you guys do. And I take my bat and just kind of flail it, and I drill myself right in the face. Blood starts spewing. Half my tooth drops to the ground. I look down to the ground. I see it. I picked it up, put it in my mouth. Blood's coming out. My nose, my eyes are welling up. And then I look at my assistant coach, and he threw one a little bit inside on me. I still think there was a little bit of conspiracy going here.
Sure.
So... And I said, I'll do a hit. And I kept trying to hit and run. I couldn't even see the ball. Sheets, I couldn't see it. So NC Wesleyan kids, I hear them go, oh, our guys are in the middle stages of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended. Now, Griff will also tell you this, went the entire year and I didn't get it fixed because they thought that was a good thing.
Sure.
Now, needless to say, we play the game, we go to Golden Corral, and I couldn't really eat a steak very well. So I had half a tooth for the majority of the year.
Love it.
Because I thought it was great to show a bunting technique.
Mm-hmm.
No different than this fall, and Griff does know this, but this fall I thought it would be great to, you know, show a base running start or race an assistant coach, and I pulled my hamstring so bad I thought someone shot me from the woods.
Gosh.
So he went down.
I'm going to need video proof of that.
Don't do that. Don't race a 10-year-old kid. Jeez, what are you doing?
Love it. Oh, love it. Anything else that jumps off to you? Funnier stories that have happened over the years, other situations that just, I mean, every coach listening to those goes, I've been in that scenario before.
Well, I will tell you this. So for years, you know, when you go to the spring trip in Florida and us Division III's, we play, and for many years, you know, and whether it be through RustMed or another organization, you had to flip for home team.
Sure.
And so in Florida, for many, many years, we'd go up, and I think once it was Paul Hess at Mount Union, we're playing, and I won the coin flip like 6 days in a row. And I kept choosing visitors. So I went and I go visitors. And the other coach would look at me, and I'm like, what? And I go, and I look at him, I said, do you think it makes a difference down here?
Yeah, right.
I said, does Homer, see, and this is where I go back to it, Sheets, that the little things in coaching, the older I get, not the little things in the baseball game, but the other things like Homer away, a 4-hour rain delay, a 1-hour delay. Mm-hmm. I have been through so many things in my life. In 2005, we sat through 2 45-minute rain delays with a game with Chapman in California where we were losing 9-2 and we came back and won 12-9.
Wow.
You know, everybody says, man, what's the perfect day in a coaching life? You know, the perfect day must have been the day you won the championship. As a matter of fact, it wasn't. We had a 2-hour rain delay before the game. But I think dealing with those things, and as a head coach, if you can do your best and manage it. Last year in the Northeast, and you know this, the weather was horrible.
Sure.
Well, if you have a coach who are always flipping out and always getting upset that this isn't right or that isn't ready versus you being the guy that pulls a tarp and works on the field,
yep.
Or you're the guy looking for an alternate site. Last year on our spring trip, I had this great idea going to Virginia and played everybody, and then the snow comes through. The whole trip was almost going to be canceled.
That's right.
I was sitting in the lobby of a hotel room. I have, now, Sheets, this is a great story. So last year, we're going to go play down and play Arcadia College on a Friday, then play Newman on a Saturday, and then travel to play all these Virginia teams.
Mm-hmm.
The Arcadia coach calls, hey, Friday's going to be, might be bad, but Thursday's sunny and 60. Do you want to play? And I'm like, sure, let's play Thursday. And then I go to my AD and he goes, well, your bus isn't coming until Friday and the bus can't company come early. I said, that's okay. So Arcadia is almost 4 hours away from Cortland. I said, I'll take two vans. And he looked at me. I said, I'll take two vans, put our guys in the vans. The other kids will stay in class. My assistant will come down with a bus on Friday. So what I did, Sheets, is we drove to down to Arcadia, 4 hours, got off the bus, stretched, took a little bit of BP, won the baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
I went over to the hotel with the 20 guys. My four assistants got in the vans, drove the vans back to Cortland. Hopped on the bus the next day and drove back down. Then it snowed for 2 days, and I made close to 60-some phone calls and was able to get 8 games throughout the week.
Wow.
Just roll with it.
Sure. That's it.
Work at it. I don't get upset. I don't have to leave 2 days before to go play a game.
Mm-hmm.
Sheets, it is common for us in the Northeast, and I will do it this year, and everyone knows. I will drive 10 hours on a Friday, get in at 1 in the morning, and play the next day. I'm okay with that. And I think the more obstacles we put in front of our players, like you need this, you need this, you need this, I think it weakens the spirit a little bit. So I say everyone will tell you at Cortland and our players, they'll never complain about traveling. They'll never complain about weather. And we're just going to come out and compete.
You've referenced a few of these folks, Joe, but I think if we try to come back to the personal Mount Rushmore, so we're looking for the 3 or 4 people that have truly impacted you the most. Who would you put up on your pedestal?
George Velasseny, 100%, number one. Steve Owens. And then I'd say it's a combination of group of people. And I'd say another person that I met as a freshman at Ithaca was a Bucky Freeman. He was 90-something years old. The field is named after him. We only had a few interactions with him, but it was so powerful. And then the people that I then met off going out in the summer leagues and meeting all these. You know, Dan McDonald was assistant at the Citadel and sent me great players. And then he went on to Ole Miss and then at Louisville, and just staying in touch with him and watching how disciplined every single guy I used to get from Louisville is in their base running and their bunting. Mm. It's impressive. It's impressive. So I would ask Dan, how do you do this? And so I'd say watching and watching him and then, you know, Dave Chamberlain up at Monroe Community College when he was the commissioner of the New York Collegiate League, listening and being around him and talking with him a lot. My assistant coaches, I'll be honest with you, they're unbelievable that they can coach with me, number one, because I put demands on them. And it's going to be someone outside of the sport of baseball here a little bit, but my high school football coach,
there you go,
Mike Foster, was unbelievable. And, you know, I was some kid that came in from the state of Maine to play in this big high school football, and everyone references discipline, but I just think, honestly, it's just like being a competitive human being.
Sure.
That's a good thing. We have to applaud that. And so often now we're trying to push away from being successful or that it's a bad thing or that we're, it's not a win at all cost. It's, you're asking a person and you look at a kid and ultimately what does a kid wants to do, coach? Help them get better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's do it. I'm not going to help you get better, man, if I let you miss three backhands in a row.
That's right.
But amen to you, Sheets, with all due respect, and I'm not, you know, blowing smoke, bud, because I've watched and been around and seen, but just the excitement and it barnstorming is part of it. Personal relationship is unbelievable. A+. And God bless your family because you are all over the place. And I'd say it's probably one of the best things. It's reinvigorated my interest in the ABCA because for a while I thought I knew everything. I really did.
Right.
I mean, I think when you get to be like, I don't know, maybe your 30s after you're coached a little bit and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I don't need to go to these things, go to these things. And then as a Division III coach, you're fundraising to go to these things.
That's right.
You're trying to, you know, do I get t-shirts for my kids or go to a convention for myself?
Right.
And I think schools are starting to understand that more and see the value, partially because of the growth of our association.
Joe, you've been so awesome with your time. I got one more question for we never end a show. Unless we ask our guests to really empty out their pockets, what haven't we covered in terms of advice or anything you would offer a coach paying attention to this podcast and listening in, and you've given them so much, give them whatever else you got left that can really set them off on a better path.
Be flexible, do it all, and don't worry about the money. And I say that, and it might be easy for me to say that, but I coached for 5 years, and Steve Owens, we laugh about this, and, you know, making, what, $1,000 a year. And if you desire and you're passionate and you really want to be a coach is not someone who fills out the lineup card. That's the easy part. Hitting the fungos, throwing the BP. Coach them. Help them get better. You know, coach all positions. You don't have to be an expert in everything, but, you know, you said it earlier. I had an All-American catcher, pro player who played for me for years, and he left me and he was my catching coach. Well, I'm a baseball coach. Coaching knowledge doesn't discriminate because I learned that at my first ABCA convention in New Orleans. So let's figure it out, as my dad would tell me. So I would say be flexible. Go coach in the summertime. Be loyal. Loyalty number one. I know that when I was an assistant coach, things were easy for me to say, cut this kid, move on for this kid, play this kid. But then when you sit in the big seat, it's not that easy. It's a human you're dealing with. So although that might be the kid it's easy to say, see ya, that might be the kid you might help the most. And I'd finish with the last thing, man. Coaches and teachers, and this has been said by a more famous person or than myself by far, you know, I added the component teaching into it. Coaching and teaching. Players and students need us the most when we want to give it the least, when they're failing. How good are you? How good are you when your team's losing 5-2 in a regional to Amherst and, you know, we're trailing every single game in 15 in the seventh inning on? Coach then. Teach then. And that's what I would say is that, and that's the thing, and this is a whole full circle experience for me because I think I probably was a bad coach for 8 or 10 years where I felt like I didn't need any more education. Mm-hmm. But I think the older we get, we love to learn.
Sure.
Probably the greatest book I've ever read in my life by far, and I read a lot more now than I ever did in college, was Resilience by Eric Greitens. It's a Bible for me now, more or less. And he's the governor of Missouri now, but he was a former Navy SEAL. And it was stories that he wrote back, or letters he wrote back and forth to his buddy who was battling post-traumatic stress syndrome. And they're so powerful, man. And there isn't a practice that goes by we don't reference something in there. So
wow.
I'd say that's it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I knew this before we hit the record button, Joe, but you're a stud, and I have respected, as a small college guy, respected your program for a long, long time, and watching you work, becoming friends over the last number of years, but more importantly, knowing Cortland State and listening to guys like Connor, other alumni, other assistant coaches, and how loyal they are to you and that program, you just absolutely opened up exactly why of how you fight for your kids, you coach for your kids, and we're just thankful there's guys like you in our game coaching the way that you do. So, man, thank you again for jumping on the call with us. We appreciate you jumping on the podcast, and obviously, Joe, we wish you the best of luck moving forward this year.
Keep up the great work, man. Awesome.
With every one of these shows, the mission keeps unfolding as we want to connect with and highlight some of the best coaches in baseball, give all of us an opportunity to hear their backstory, sit down in the audio dugout and listen as they reflect back on their careers, even explore their journey and their growth and grab onto their takeaways and bring them into how we coach and go about growing this game. Huge thanks to Joe Brown for jumping on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast with us and pulling back the curtain on the SUNY Cortland baseball program. Thanks again, Joe. We wish you and the Red Dragons the very best as you head into the spring season. But before that, we look forward to seeing you in Indy this January. And we hope you're making plans yourself for Indy. Bring your staff. Come invest in your development as a coach. You will find no better opportunity each and every year than to join us at our annual convention. Head over to abca.org, click on membership, and see the great things and benefits we offer for our coaches. Plus, you can also click on events. The hotel and transportation information is there. Check out the extensive list of activities we have waiting for each of you January 4th through the 7th. It's 4 days of baseball heaven. You will not find a better speaker list around the country. Walk around the world's largest baseball trade show. Go sit in on our expo theater. If you're a youth coach, come join us on Saturday, January 6th for our youth clinic. Guys, there's so much waiting for you at our national convention. It is a can't-miss opportunity for coaches. If you have any questions at all on the convention, on membership, please never hesitate to reach out to us. Now make sure you're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. You can find me on there as well at CoachSheets3. And you can reach me directly by email anytime at Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, at abca.org. Now, many of you are reaching out, and it's always a pleasure to connect with more tremendous baseball guys. But now I come to you, and I ask a favor. Share this show. All of us have a few guys. Maybe it's our assistant coaches, or maybe it's just a group of friends that we know love baseball. Maybe find a great episode that hits home and share that with your players. Maybe it's one of our catching episodes, let's say. Give that to your catching core as a homework assignment. Have them listen to the shows, take notes, and you can discuss them in a classroom setting. Maybe do it for your infielders, do it for your pitchers, your hitters. Maybe it's just the local youth coaches or the dads in your area that you know they need a few resources to help develop and educate those guys. Send them the link to the iTunes. They can subscribe to it. It'll show up on their phone each and every Tuesday. Send them to abca.org/podcast. They can scroll through and listen to the episodes they want, but also make sure they're following us on Twitter at ABCA1945. They'll never miss the release of the show. And as always, guys, thank you all for spreading the great word about this podcast. There's a few things we want to make sure you're aware of. One is that hashtag ABCA chat is tonight, Tuesday, November 14th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're talking about baseball strength and conditioning from last week's episode with TCU's Zach Dakin and Coastal Carolina's Nick White. Some awesome information was shared on that show that brings us to the chat. And we're going to jump on there with coaches from all over, ask them questions while they respond with their insight, their resources, videos, all in an effort to help connect coaches, but also helping them challenge what they're doing inside their programs. It's awesome. Make sure you take time to come join us on our next hashtag ABCA chat on Twitter. We're also staring down our last weekend on this fall's Barnstormers Coaching Clinics Tour, landing at Duke University on Saturday, November 18th, and then on Sunday, heading over to the University of South Carolina to wrap this whole tour up. And wow, what an absolute blast this tour of clinics has been. And you can always travel with us on Twitter. Make sure you're following us at ABCA1945. You could search hashtag ABCA Clinics. Click latest and you could scroll back through all of our tour stops, watch the videos from each speaker, and see the work that your coaching fraternity has done to educate coaches, strengthen baseball communities around the country, and grow the game of baseball. And lastly, this is the podcast for the American Baseball Coaches Association, and we appreciate what each of you are doing out there to teach this great game. You're impacting young people's lives, and you're staying hungry and driven. You crave more baseball knowledge, and I promise if you keep listening, we're going to keep getting these out there for you. And as always, thank you for staying dialed into our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. And until next week, keep growing, keep developing, keep challenging what you're doing inside this game. We wish you and your club the very best. And thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.